Hi, this is Joseph Jaffe, and I am submitting an MP3 audio response to a bunch of questions from Chris Wilson associated with the future of work. Now, this is something that I'm very passionate about, not just as an individual or even in a professional capacity, but indeed because Crayon really has strived and experimented and, you know, made a couple of mistakes along the way, but certainly believes that there can be a better future, especially a better future of work. You know, if you think about even today's times, these tough, uncertain times, how many people have been laid off that actually had to uproot themselves, leave their communities, leave their surroundings, leave their support structure, and move to another city, another town, you know, even another time zone for a company that basically, you know, maybe it's a bit harsh to say discarded them, but certainly for various reasons, economic in particular, was not able to continue investing in them. So, you know, one of the things that I thought of when I started Crayon was this idea of respect the life force. People should be close to their life force. Obviously, part of that is this idea of blogging and being able to be a participant and not being gated or firewalled. But the other part was very much associated with a physicality, being close to family, children, community, friends, etc., etc. Also taking advantage, you know, Greg Verdina, our chief strategy officer, he was commuting up to 4 hours a day to go into Digitas from Long Island. And it wasn't a quality commute. I mean, he was often on a train and unable to do some work. So, you know, not getting a seat on a train is a good example of that. And I wanted to change that, and I believed that I could change that, and that Crayon could be an antidote to those trappings and those shortcomings. There's one more reason as well, and I'll go into the model a little bit later, or at least the vision or the philosophy, but there's a lot wrong with this idea of physical presence, in a sense. You know, one of them is the fact that there are... it's not a very productive environment, you know, to go from meeting to meeting to meeting to meeting where the purpose of meetings are to have another meeting. That was the one thing. The other thing about, which is less about the, you know, the physical and remote office, but I just think that companies today are so traditional in the way that they set up and structure themselves. Obviously, the biggest manifestation of that is the physical, what I think is a shortcoming, but a restriction, a restrictive environment. But that restrictive environment is also digital, in the sense that everything is monitored and controlled and firewalled and gated. And it's unbelievable how many brands cannot even access their own homepage. No wonder corporate websites suck so royally. It's because the brands that actually work on them aren't even able to actually see the monstrosity of a creation that, for the most part, the agencies have created, big flash-based skip intro, you know, edifices, tributes to their own self-grandeur that end up crashing browsers. So that's just a little bit of an intro or interlude, if you will. Now I'm going to go ahead and answer your questions one by one. Question one, Crayon is self-described as a virtual company. What makes Crayon a virtual company and how does it differ from other companies? Obviously, I accept the fact that, you know, just in that introduction, some of your questions are already going to be answered. You know, I don't know that we're actually we may have once described ourselves as part virtual, but I actually don't think that we're a virtual company. In fact, I don't believe that if I did do it then, I certainly haven't done this in the last 18 months. And it has nothing to do with Second Life, by the way. It's not us trying to distance ourselves from Second Life. We still pay, I think, $200 a month to have an island in Second Life. We have not abandoned ship yet. Although, you know, it is 4:53 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so who knows what might happen in the next 7 minutes. But, you know, in all seriousness, I always described us as a remote company. The remote model is really the model that I think is more accurate in terms of describing us, as opposed to this idea of a virtual company. Simply because virtual company did to a degree get associated with virtual worlds and avatars, and also, you know, the fact that I don't mind a virtual being a virtual company, but I certainly didn't want Crayon to be thought of as a company that only serviced virtual worlds and only operated in the gaming space. That clearly is not who we are and what we do and how we do it. So how do we differ from other companies? Well, in many ways. I mean, I think the vision for Crayon was almost Hollywood meets Starbucks meets JetBlue. So let me explain to you what I mean by that. Hollywood model is the fact that there is, let's say, a small core of permanent staff, and then, you know, a limitless, endless network, if you will, of partners, of different pieces of the puzzle that can be activated at any given time. So, you know, when you're a movie producer, you probably have various executive producers that you've worked with before, directors that you prefer. Those directors themselves have back office and even stars or actors that they prefer. You look at Spielberg and Tom Hanks, for example. But when you're making a horror movie, you probably want to hire the best makeup artists on the planet. When you're making a science fiction movie, you want the best special effects people on the planet. When you're making a love story or a comedy, not so much. Different set of staff and ensemble, both front office in terms of actors and back office in terms of grips and production assistants, etc., etc. So that was one part, the Hollywood part. Then you had the Starbucks part, and the Starbucks part was this idea that barristers in a Starbucks were part-time, and yet they had access to medical and benefits and also stock options. And I loved the idea of saying you can be useful and valuable and productive and part of a company even if you're part-time, and because of that, why shouldn't you be treated like a full-time employee in terms of having medical and benefits and stock options, etc., etc.? I mean, if you think about it, why, it's the same linear and narrow-minded thinking that says you have to be in this physical location from 9 in the morning to 5 o'clock at night, or otherwise you're not considered to be valuable or useful. Well, if you don't have to be in the same physical location, why do you have to clock watch? Why do you have to punch the clock? I mean, even the even agencies, and Crayon isn't an agency. Crayon is a strategic consultancy. But even agencies to this day, have moved away from commission, and many of them have even moved away from fee-based pricing in terms of X number of hours by Y number of people. It's about quality of output as opposed to quantity of input. So I hope that answers your first question. Second question, what tools are necessary to operate productively in a virtual company? Well, you know, we've experimented quite a bit. We've used Uvu, which is one of our clients. We use Basecamp, we use Backpack, we use HiRise, we've used a number we've used Google Docs, I'm trying to think what other tools we've used that's really helped us kind of be more productive and collaborate better. You know, I'm one thing that I'm definitely trying to do more of is to use I've a LiveScribe pen, and I love the idea of being able to in fact, I have this vision that we will all have whiteboards, connected whiteboards, and we'll be able to doodle and brainstorm. And when I write or write on my tablet screen, my other colleagues will be able to see what I'm writing. I think that's one of the missing links or missing pieces of the puzzle right now, which is, you know, the ability to brainstorm together. I feel that that's the only aspect of Crayon that I think we still haven't nailed yet, which is collaboration, specifically from a creativity standpoint. But, you know, that's it in a nutshell. You know, we experimented a little bit with WebEx or GoToMeeting, one of the two, but we didn't renew our and we tried Adobe Connect, I think it's called, but we didn't renew our subscriptions or our trial memberships there. You know, for the most part, good old conference call, Uvu, Google Docs, Basecamp, Backpack, HiRise, etc. has been enough for us. We also meet once a week in the real world, in the offices of our client Uvu in New York City. And I must admit, you know, initially when we launched the company and we started out, the idea was anybody could work here, and we had people in London, and we had people on the West Coast, and it just turned out to be a little bit harder. You know, I think you do need a certain amount of physical contact. So right now, we've just recently brought aboard two people that are based in Boston, and so now we know at least, you know, at the very, very maximum, they're 3 hours away from us by car. Or train, etc., and that makes a big difference. So we know that if necessary, once a week, we could all be together in the same place at the same time. But certainly with our Bostonian friends now, that may be twice a month or every other week, and we're going to experiment using that, amount or frequency of contact, etc. All right, question three. So, question three, what factor does speed play in your company? Does operating virtually help or hinder your ability to get things done quickly? Well, it absolutely helps the ability to get things done quickly. And from a speed-to-market standpoint, I mean, I think there are two ways of looking at that. Look, our speed-to-market is a function of being connected. And by the way, the other tool, going back to question two, is the fact that everybody has, for the most part, an iPhone, and everybody also has a 3G Wi-Fi card for their computers. A very important way to always be connected, whether we're in a Starbucks or sitting on a plane waiting for it to take off, or on a train, etc., etc. But in terms of speed, I mean, again, you're just, you know, it's a function of the access speed and your broadband high speed or Wi-Fi connection. Recently on an American Airlines flight, I used their GoGo service, and I mean, besides the fact I was twittering while I was 30,000 feet in the air, I was also connected to the workplace, and that's kind of cool as well, especially on a 6-hour flight from New York to San Francisco or LA. I will say one thing as well in terms of getting things done quickly. You know, the one challenge of a remote company and a virtual company is what you lack. You make up for a lot of the deficiencies, but one thing that is very hard to make up is that that energy that comes from physical contact, and also, quite frankly, let's get a little bit more practical and tactical management. It is hard to manage people or be managed in a somewhat remote environment, and that presents its own unique set of obstacles and challenges. So project management is absolutely key, and really, you know, I think the challenge is, you know, this idea of being of out of sight, out of mind. When you're away and you're detached, it's easy to kind of go astray, in a sense. On the flip side, I think self-starters, independent people, people that can operate as I have for the last 8 years in an office with nobody but myself, situated at any point in time, it does take a special type of person to thrive in that environment. And what we found is that people can really flounder and wither without being around others, like-minded people, and that, you know, that intimacy, but also that energy that comes from that physical contact. Question four, and obviously I can say I'm answering these questions as we go through them. What are the challenges of working virtually? Well, I think I've mentioned several of those challenges. There are certain interpersonal, physical advantages of being of proximity, especially, I think, from a collaboration and a creativity standpoint. It's also just staying motivated and I think maybe I answer that question slightly differently, which is I think people take for granted the benefits of that physical intimacy. One of the things that we've tried to do is make sure that when we are around each other, that occasionally we can go out for drinks and make sure that we don't lose, you know, just that little bit of personal quality time as well. Number five, Do you think social media could be a bridge that leads more companies to operate virtually? Well, again, you got to look at the. Let's start with the economy. It's the economy, stupid. Not that I'm calling you stupid, Chris, but right now, I think a lot of companies are going to have to be forced to think about new, creative, and innovative ways of lowering overhead, and one of them is going to be more virtual and more remote. Existence. And I'm using virtual interchangeably now with remote as opposed to Second Life. Although I hoped at the time Second Life would create incredible visual ways of brainstorming, etc. But Linden did not deliver in terms of being able to innovate and I think create this really strong B2B platform. But anyway, that's a different story for another day. Before we even get to social media, again, I think that there are also some societal and cultural factors. Why can't we be close to our family and be productive members of the workforce? I just realized that I didn't answer the third part of it, which was the part of the model, which is JetBlue. JetBlue for the longest time, in fact, I still think to this day, the call center and the customer service center and the ticketing is all done by stay-at-home moms, essentially Mormon moms in Utah. At least that's how it used to be, and so. It was this belief that there are so many predominantly women, but not exclusively, clearly, of women that said, "Well, I want to go off and have a child, and I want to be a mom. Why can't I be a productive manager or a leader in the workforce and be a mom?" And businesses said, "Well, you can't do that." Well, guess what? That's changing. So I think that from a cultural, from a socioeconomic standpoint, there are forces in play. From a social media standpoint. There were some B2B applications of Yammer, I think, which was the kind of corporate closed version of Twitter. But there definitely are tools now to allow collaboration and communication and connectivity. And there's no question that social media plays, yes, to answer your question, could be a bridge that leads more companies to operate virtually. Closed groups on Facebook, I mean, there's cheap stuff and easy stuff and kind of clunky solutions, but there are going to be a lot more corporate solutions. For example, blogging right now, many, many companies have got, they may not be doing anything externally with blogs, but they sure as hell are doing a lot internally with blogs, allowing people to now collaborate and share information more freely and comment and riff and contribute in terms of extending and amplifying a meme or answering a question internally. Think Yahoo Answers, but internally. Every single one of these solutions has unbelievable potential from a closed corporate and internal standpoint. Question six, are physical face-to-face meetings still necessary? Well, physical face-to-face contact is. Meetings are probably not. If there is no objective other than having another meeting, this is old school, old fashioned thinking. Again, my belief is when it comes to brainstorming and creativity, and more right brain type activities, I'd say yes. From a left brain standpoint, less so. So no. Question seven, how have the rules of collaboration changed for businesses? Well, look, there are also going to be lots of implications here regarding IP and regarding ambiguity. I mean, there's also a lot of trappings that come from communication, from digital communication, not being able to read body language, for example, the ambiguity associated with email. So I think there are going to be new sets of collaboration rules as well, especially when we factor in, and it's not exclusively, but I hate to even stereotype and use and talk about millennials, but we are going to have to think about how having an influx, a new generation of workers and thinkers and actors in the business, what that's going to mean for collaboration. Even little visual cues in terms of having a meeting and someone's checking their Twitter, I mean, that's just basically rude, but guess what? We're living in an ADD or media deficit disorder environment now, and that kind of stuff is going to happen more often. I mean, I'm bugged by it. I don't like it, even though I'm guilty of it as well. Very often when we have crown meetings, I'll tell people, close your laptop. because I know they're connected. And Wi-Fi connectivity makes it really tough because we're distracted. We hear pings, we hear rings, we hear tweets, we hear chirps, and immediately our attention moves elsewhere. So, you know, from a collaboration standpoint, there are going to be very interesting changes. I'll just say that for now. Question 8. If methods like co-working, crowdsourcing, and operating virtually were to become the norm in the business world, how would that change the way organizations operate? Well, you know, there are going to be different ways of also rewarding and briefing and incentivizing and extending ideas come into play. And I think from a crowdsourcing standpoint, let's not forget that we're going to be actually working not only globally and across departments, but also with our consumers. So there are going to have to be a unique set of new rules and operating procedures and process and reward structures as well. Sometimes, you know, fortune will favor the software developer. I mean, you know, for example, if you're going to Basecamp as an example, only one person can edit at any given time. Well, that helps this idea of who's got the master copy right now, you know, which is often a problem. When you, I mean, think about how almost Neanderthal-like offices, Microsoft's Office product is, where you have the track changes, which is kind of like so old school, where now with Google Docs, everybody can be editing at the same time, and you can see all of those changes in real time, you know, versus Basecamp that at least says, okay, one at a time, please, and you can compare one version or one revision at a time. So from an, you know, organizational standpoint, we're also going to see a lot more open, accessible, transparent, flat organizations, I think. Again, especially going back to this idea of millennials coming in, that hierarchical, closed structures, I think, are going to decrease in terms of ability to attract and retain talent and change towards organizations that are much more human and authentic. You know, all the very terms that we talk about, social media, that brands should operate with their with their customers, will companies need to operate that way internally, employee to employee. Question 9, and what would that mean for the corporate giants of today? Well, you know, I mean, here today, gone tomorrow. Look at how many companies are literally shutting their doors right now. How much excess and wastage there was built into the model. The corporate giants are going to change. And by the way, there are companies like IBM, just one company that comes to mind, that absolutely, you know, operates and has been for some time, I think, with a new, more progressive culture and approach to you know, to collaboration, etc., etc. You know, you're also seeing companies like Accenture. A lot of the consultants do it as well. You know, you're also seeing on a different level companies like Cisco. Really, I mean, think about how much equity Cisco is putting behind their telepresence solution right now, which really just, you know, is a continuation, but at a corporate level, of the themes of these questions. Question 10, with these changes in the way that people communicate and collaborate online, marketing and advertising companies are needing to reach out and work with a new type of creative team. What do these creatives look like? What are their skills? Well, I'll tell you, at Crayon, nobody ever again will have the word creative in their title. Nobody. I will never, ever hire anybody. Well, I said two things. One is, if you don't blog, you can't work at this company, period. No exceptions, or very few exceptions. You've really got to make a ridiculously strong case as to why you walk your talk, why you understand how the world is changing, why and how you understand and can deliver against conversational marketing, community dialogue and partnership without being a blogger. I mean, if you can make the case that you've got a rocking Twitter stream, as somebody commented on my blog, well, fine, but you go ahead and you'll be guilty until proven innocent. I mean, you've got to sell hard to me, baby, because otherwise I'm just not interested. And maybe the other exception is if you are unbelievably senior and maybe don't, you know, are operating things like P&Ls and business plans, maybe there might be a little bit of an exception to the norm, but probably not. For the most part, there are going to be very few exceptions to this particular norm. But the other one is this idea of, you know, if you come here and you think creativity is only the job of an elite few that sit, you know, in their little tower and shun and scorn everybody else. Well, you know, you certainly aren't going to be working at Crayon, and I doubt you're going to be working at many other companies as well. Everybody in this company needs to be creative. They need to be creative thinkers. They need to be creative strategists. They need to be creative problem solvers, and they need to be ideas people. It is just as simple as that. And again, these creatives are also going to be our customers. The number one, you know, according to USA's ad meter, the number one commercial this year was created by consumers, by customers. So there you go. All that amount of money, all that training, you know, all that kind of arrogance and flatulence, all those visits to Cannes apparently are still not enough to get you number one and your number one position on USA Today's ad meter. So, you know, these creatives are going to look a lot less like they used to and a lot more just like you and me. Finally, question 11. In terms of that future, what are you most excited about? What do you see as the biggest threat for the future of work? Well, I mean, I don't look at threats at all. I mean, the threat is the status quo. The opportunity, what gets me excited, is about the fact that I really do believe that the world is a global workforce. The world is flat, and the world is represented by a global workforce. And like-minded people and passionate people can unite and unify dynamically, ad hoc as needed to produce and create just the most ridiculously unbelievable, impactful, and powerful types of solutions. I really do believe that. And I think companies are going to have to mirror those changes that our consumers are living and experiencing themselves. You know, one of the first things I ever did when I left the agency world, the corporate world, is I said, created this phrase, new marketing for a new consumer. And I said, the world has changed, the consumer has changed, but marketing has not. Why? You know, why is the organization itself not adapted as our consumers have? You know, I created another model that had technology, consumer, and organization. Same point as well. Technology is the change agent, the catalyst. The consumer has changed and continues to change, but the organization has not. If, in fact, it takes one to know one, well, you know, Crayon has taken that approach where we walk our talk. Organizations themselves are going to have to mirror the communities which they serve. And as I've often said, I believe that brands will be redefined based on how they rely on, relate to, and resonate with their communities, with the human beings that ultimately are responsible for our paychecks on a day-to-day basis, our customers. And until we figure out a different kind of solution, we will continue to fall further and further behind. As a final point, and you'd ask me if you left anything out, I don't think you really did leave anything out, but I just think that all of these social media tools and all of this transparency and all of this authenticity and everything that's been discussed, we've got to live it internally, we've got to live it externally, and then we've got to figure out how to break down the barriers between internal and external. Those are like three stages as well. And the fourth stage is this idea of organizations and the people that make up the organizations really being one and the same. That the brand, the corporation, is ultimately just the sum, you know, the whole is the sum of its parts, and its parts are a whole bunch of human beings. And it's important, you know, that these two worlds come together, that we see corporations as human. Number one, that employees are free to talk with other employees, that customers are free to talk with other customers, that employees are free to talk with customers. The more of these connections we can create, the more of these relationships that we can create, the better organizations will do. And so the future of work is going to be a very exciting one. It is one, without question, where quality will be rewarded, where IP will be sacrosanct, where people really will be incentivized based on the strength of the ideas that they come up with, short-term, medium-term, and long-term. There will be a residual value, a net present value for ideas, and those ideas will be able to come from anyone, anywhere, anytime. And that's going to take a lot of development, a lot of infrastructure, a lot of process, a lot of technology, a new marketplace. But I think when all of these factors come together, hopefully your company and my company will be leading the charge and flourishing as opposed to floundering. So I hope you enjoyed that, Chris, and thank you for the opportunity to contribute.